Yesterday we were talking about a servant and a servant's heart. And I mentioned the fact that one of the songs that really was a challenge to me was Ron Hamilton's song, Make Me a Servant. And the verse we read yesterday was, Make me a servant like you, dear Lord, living for others each day, humble and meek, helping the weak, loving in all that I say. Give me, Lord, a servant's heart. Here's my life, take every part. Give me, Lord, a servant's heart. Help me draw so close to you that your love comes shining through. Give me, Lord, a servant's heart. Give me, Lord, a servant's heart. And someone gave me, since we came home, Andrew Murray's book on 365 Daily Devotions on Prayer. I just want to read two things out of there. He says, true Christianity aims at having the character of Christ formed in us. Then, in our most ordinary activities and relationships with people, it will be second nature for us to act like him. All this is possible because Christ himself lives in us. And we talked about the passage in Philippians 2 yesterday about let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. And then we talked about how we can reach out to other people and be servants to other people. And he says, personal devotion to a friend or a pursuit means that they will always hold a place in our heart, even when other persons and things occupy our attention. Personal devotion to Jesus means that we will allow nothing to separate us from him for a moment. To abide in him and his love, to be kept by him and his grace, to be doing his will and pleasing him, this cannot possibly be an irregular practice if we are truly devoted to him. The clearer the object of our goal, the better we will be able to accomplish it. And then he says, our success during the day will depend upon the time we spend alone with him in the morning. And that's where our being a servant starts, is with our servanthood to him. As we continue on this morning, the second verse to that song says, make me a witness like you, dear Lord. So we're going to switch from being a servant serving to a servant witnessing. And he says, sharing the love of the cross, sharing your word, till all have heard, serving whatever the cost. Let's look at John chapter 12. John 12, just three verses here. John 12:24, verily, verily, I say unto you, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. But if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit. He that loveth his life shall lose it, and he that hateth his life in this world shall keep it unto life eternal. If any man serve me, let him follow me, and where I am, there shall also my servant be. If we love him, if we serve him, we'll follow him. And then over in Matthew chapter 16, this was interesting because it's the same three verses, 24 to 26. In Matthew 16:24, then said Jesus unto his disciples, if any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. And whosoever shall save his life shall lose it, and whosoever shall lose his life for my sake shall find it. For what is a man profited if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul? And what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? And what's a servant? He loses himself to his master. He dedicated everything he had. He was available. And we talked a little bit about that yesterday. He was available. We talked about women in the Bible. We talked about Dorcas. We talked about Lydia. We talked about Phoebe, that Paul called a servant. But this morning I'd like for us to look at Acts chapter 18. Beginning in verse 1, it says, after these things, Paul departed from Athens and came to Corinth and found a certain Jew named Aquila, born in Pontus, lately come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because that Claudius had commanded all Jews to depart from Rome and came unto them. And you know the story of Aquila and Priscilla. They were tent makers, and Paul was a tent maker. And it's interesting that they, about 6 months after Paul left Philippi, where he had been with Lydia and her household and those that had been saved there and all that we looked at yesterday with what God had done, he developed another close friendship. And this was with Aquila and Priscilla. And they helped him work through difficulties in the church in Corinth and the church in Ephesus. Because we see as we study through a little bit of Aquila and Priscilla, that they left Corinth when he did and went with him to Ephesus. And then when he left Ephesus, they stayed in Ephesus. But they were Jews from Rome. They were both saved. They were tent makers. And so can you imagine, hour after hour, putting together these strips of goat hair to make a tent? And Pastor Hamilton was talking about a lady that he goes and sees while she's having chemotherapy, and she reads and does puzzles because sometimes her treatments are 7 hours long. Can you imagine Paul with Aquila and Priscilla sitting there and sewing these strips of goat hair together to make a tent? Obviously, they were going to be doing something other than just using their hands. They were going to be talking. And so the instruction, the give and the take, the encouragement that it was. And this is what we often can do in our witnessing, is just spending time with people, being involved in their daily activities. After they had been sewing, after Paul had been there, he built up such a relationship that it says in verse 5, when Silas and Timothy had come from Macedonia, Paul was pressed in the spirit and testified to the Jews that Jesus was Christ. Obviously, Aquila and Priscilla encouraged him in that. They were an encouragement to each other in their spiritual lives. And it's wonderful for us to have another person or someone else that we can encourage, and someone that can encourage us spiritually. I know, for instance, John and Beth, they have a small work. And I'm sure that it encourages them when someone emails them and says, John and Beth, we're praying for you. We know some of the struggles you're going through. We know you reach out. We know you're visiting. We know you're doing the things that you should be witnessing. And yet you're just not seeing the results. And we can be real encouragers. And I think that that was one of the things that the servants were to their master. Often, as you see some of the relationships that a master had with his servant, it wasn't all, you do this, you do this, you do this. They often took advice from their servants. And obviously, we're not going to give God advice, but we can encourage one another, and we can be building up one another. And I think that this is what Paul, Aquila and Priscilla did for Paul. And then in verse 8, and Crispus, the chief ruler of the synagogue, believed on the Lord with all his house, and many of the Corinthians, hearing, believed and were baptized. How many times have you said to a missionary, I've been praying for you, and I look forward to the day when we get to heaven, and we'll stand with you because you are such a vital part of our ministry in praying for us and the people that we're seeing saved in your churches, pastors' wives, in your churches. When people in your church are praying for you and you're praying specifically for people to be saved, who reaps the blessings of that? Everyone in the church that was praying for them. And we're reaching out to others. Priscilla rejoiced that Paul stayed and settled down to minister for a year and a half. Now, I'm not sure whether Paul stayed with them for a year and a half, but how would you like to have somebody living with you for a year and a half that wasn't related to you? I think during that time we'd see whether we truly had a servant's heart or not, whether we were gracious enough, or whether we, one more person, one more thing to do, more laundry to do. We have it easy with our washing machines. And in verse 24, when Apollos visited, it says, a certain Jew named Apollos, born in Alexandria, an eloquent man and mighty in the scriptures, came to Ephesus. This is by this time Priscilla and Aquila had gone to Ephesus. This man was instructed in the way of the Lord, and being fervent in the spirit, he spake and taught diligently the things of the Lord, knowing only the baptism of John. And he began to speak boldly in the synagogue, whom when Aquila and Priscilla had heard, they took him unto them, and expounded unto him the way of God more perfectly. And so they worked in discipleship. And as We work with people as you work with people. I'm talking about we in general, not just Don and I in Uruguay. When we work with people, they need to know more of the Word of God. The first phrase of that song says, showing the love of the cross. We have a lady in Uruguay that comes to our church. She is a believer. She's about this tall. She walks with a cane because she has very, very bad arthritis. And when she doesn't live real far from town, but when she has to walk to town to get the bus, it takes her about half an hour. And it probably wouldn't be much farther than from here to that traffic light down there. And so one day I found out she had to go to Montevideo for a doctor's appointment. And I said, well, Nellie, how about if I go with you? She was going by herself. She had told me that nobody in her family could go. Her daughter had to work. This one didn't want to go. He didn't care. Her son didn't care about her. And so I said, well, Nellie, I'll go with her. She said, well, we have to leave at 6:15 in the morning. And I said, well, what time will we be back? And she said, about 1 o'clock. So I asked Don. He said, yeah. He said, you'll just have to get up earlier than we normally do. And you can go with her. And I said, well, I'll take the cell phone. If anything changes, I'll call you. Cell phones are wonderful. And so we went. Nellie saw the doctor. She's had breast cancer, and so she was taking chemo. But she had to see the doctor in between some of her treatments, and so I went with her. When we got there and she saw the doctor, she found out that she had an infection in her lungs. They wanted to take a chest x-ray, which meant going to ER. ERs in Uruguay are the fastest way to get x-rays taken, but ERs in Uruguay aren't any faster than ERs here. So we went and we waited, and we waited. And she said, can you go check to make sure they didn't forget me? So I went and checked. No, they hadn't forgotten her. They just had a lot of people. And so we waited. And so about 1 o'clock, I called Donna and I said, we're in ER, and I'm not sure what time we're going to be home. 6:30 that night, we walked out of the hospital. And all this time, Nellie, as we were walking out of the hospital, I just said, Lord, you know we need to get home. We left Nellie's house at 6:15. That's a long day for her. And so we walked out, and just as we were coming up up the ramp to the street, here comes a bus going to Pando. It was going direct. If you get a normal bus, they stop every few blocks. But this one only stopped about 6 or 8 times between. And it was full. It was 6:30 at night. That's a very busy time. People get off work at 6:30 sometimes. And so she said, well, it's crowded. I said, Nellie, if there's not a seat, I'll make somebody get up. I can stand up, but I'll make somebody get up for you. And she said to me that night, she said, Pat, she said, if you had not been along, I never would have made it through the day. You know, and just, I didn't know I was going to be there all day. And obviously, like you, there were things on my list to do. But showing the love of the cross, being available, and you can all give examples of that, similar things in your lives that have happened, that God has used you in a way that you didn't expect to be used when you started the day. And that's being a servant. Another one, Gustavo. Many of you have heard of Gustavo and Julie, and you've prayed for them. Gustavo's father died, and I happened to be at the hospital when he died with his mother and his sister, and when we got back, they asked if we would tell, his sister asked Don and I if we would tell Gustavo and Julia that his father had died. So when we got back to Pando, we went over to the house, and they said, well, will you go with us to the funeral home? They don't embalm in Uruguay, so they have burial the next day. So they stayed at the funeral home all night, and the funeral home was in Montevideo, and we'd been in Montevideo all day, but they wanted to know if we would go back. And Don said to me, he said, will you go with them? And so I went, slept in the chair in the funeral home for a couple hours, and the funeral was the next day. I rode back to Pando with them, got back about 1:30, and by 2:30 I was picking up kids for young people's. But New Year's Day, Gustavo's sister, who really had not had much contact with us, she's an oncologist, she's a medical doctor, and most of the people we work with are poorer, and so she kind of has that, I'm up here, you're down here, attitude toward us. On New Year's Day, Nancy called us to wish us Happy New Year because she appreciated the fact that we had been there. And so just pray for Gustavo's sister. His mother now lives with Gustavo and Julia. Pray for Gustavo, his salvation. When about two and a half years ago, Ralph had given Don 2 T-shirts. It said, Faith Bible Church, Bellevue, Ohio. And so Gustavo didn't have a lot of clothing. Don had two t-shirts plus all of his other clothes. So he said, I'll just give one of these to Gustavo. So he took this t-shirt and he gave it to Gustavo. When Ralph and Susan were down in 2006, we took Ralph and Susan to meet Gustavo and Julia. Gustavo fell in love with Ralph. When they were down there last year for the building team, Gustavo came almost every day to work with Ralph. He came to church twice with Ralph. He said, will you give me, of course, Ralph doesn't speak Spanish, Gustavo doesn't speak English. And so he said, Rafael, that's what they call Ralph in Spanish, would you get me a Bible? And so we bought a Spanish Bible for Gustavo, showing the love of the cross. It doesn't even matter if there's a language barrier. God can still use you in showing the love of the cross. Tragic deaths. I remember an email, I think it was from Dan Greenfield, about the lady whose husband had been killed in a tractor accident and how they reached out to her and her family during that time. And I'm sure that most of you have had experiences in your church where there's been an unexpected death. And there's unsaved family. I think of Kathy Ettinger with her dad's funeral last week. Unsaved members in their family and reaching out to them and the grace that God can give in showing the love of the cross. Then the next phrase is sharing your word till all have heard. Many of the people, most of the people that come to our church in Pando, when they started coming, did not own a Bible, did not know anything about the Bible. Some of them had been in Pentecostal churches and Mormon churches and mixed up with the Jehovah's Witnesses, but they really did not have a clue. When Don would talk to them about the Gospels, they wouldn't know what the Gospels were. If we were to talk to them about Aquila and Priscilla when they first started coming, they wouldn't have had a clue who they were. And so we got all of them the same Bible, and when Don was preaching, he would tell them what page number he was on. And then Westerville ladies sent us down bookmarks with the books of the Bible on it. Every time we give a Bible, we give one of those bookmarks away. And so they had no knowledge at all. So we have lots and lots of teaching opportunities. They're growing. We have a monthly ladies meeting now, and we have Sunday school. We have a preaching service. We have prayer meeting. And we are hoping that we can have some other, if we had some more help, we could do some more reaching out in discipling them more, going into their homes and having teaching times with them. We have correspondence courses that we sometimes will use with them in letting them do them, and then we talk to them about the lessons, but not in an actual teaching situation. Then there's towns and villages. It says, till all have heard. There's towns and villages all over Uruguay, many of them with 10, 15,000 people that have no gospel witness. And one of them, earlier this year, before we came home on furlough, there was an article in the newspaper that said 20% of the deaths in this town are suicide. 20% of the deaths are suicide. And as we mentioned this to a man a couple weeks ago, he said, why? He said, isn't there a church there? Don't they have any hope? And we said, no. There's no church there. A town of about 15, 16,000 people and not one gospel witness. So pray for workers. Pray that others might be willing to go, that sharing the word till all have heard. Then the last line says, serving whatever the cost. I know from experience that for me, one of the hardest things being a missionary, and I think this is whatever the cost, is the goodbyes. As we get church directories, we look through the church directories and we see, well, where's so-and-so? Or we get emails and they'll say, well, so-and-so went to be with the Lord. Or this, saying goodbye to family. We're delighted that John, Mark, and Deborah came up this weekend. We were just with them in September. But goodbyes are hard. And that's one reason why we come to the OBF conference, because we get to see so many of you right before we leave. And we get fed from the word before we go back and are continuously giving out. Another one I think of not necessarily for us, but I think of missionaries in Cameroon, in Cambodia, in a lot of the countries that are not as developed as what Uruguay is. It's health situations. I think of Jim and Jenna Wright with their two little ones. I think of even the Nicholsons with their two little ones in Great Britain. Health situations come up, and if you are not where, I think of the Macias and Deborah down there with their little ones. Took them to the doctors and thought they were getting helped, and they ended up having to come back here. That's part of the cost of missionary service. Then for some there's isolation. You may have a small work, you may have a large work. You may have a lot of believers to support you. You may not have hardly anybody that's a believer. And I know as a pastor's daughter, pastors and those in leadership can't always share what's going on with very many people. And that's the way it should be. But sometimes you feel isolated. And that to me is part of the cost. Then there's Muslim countries. And all that involves. I thought of Grace Studdard when we were here in the missions conference. She's 17. She said to us when we were talking with her about some of the struggles that she faces, is one of them is not having friends. Most of the girls in Africa her age are married. So she has no one her age. And you know, as I was thinking about this, I thought not only for our missionary kids, but for missionary wives, for pastors' wives. I told my daughter Rachel that until the Lord was all she needed, he wouldn't give her a husband. Because I said, often your husband's not going to be available. And the same thing is true for missionaries, missionary wives, pastors, pastors' wives, and lay people in the churches. If our spiritual life, our servanthood, our whatever is dependent on our mate, what if we're not married? Or what if our husband has got a phone call? I have to run to the hospital and see so-and-so. Or that plumbing leak at the camp just has to be fixed. Our dependence has to be on God. And you know, to me there is a joy and a contentment in knowing that you're where God wants you to be. In knowing that we're where God wants us to be. And yes, the goodbyes are hard. Yes, there's isolation, there's loneliness, there's not for, you know, we don't feel it so much, but I'm thinking of other missionaries in other isolated countries. But when we think what Christ gave up, the little bit that we have to give up, really is insignificant. It's really insignificant. I'm going to take the next few minutes to just give you some prayer requests for Don and I. As you know, we're going back on Tuesday. It was exciting to us, all the little details of getting ready to go back, getting tickets confirmed, getting the cell phone contract canceled, getting the car sold and all those details. We actually had the car sold clear back in August. But it's going to Minnesota. When we sign the title, our tags are no longer valid. And we have to do that before we go because it has to be notarized. So the Lord gave us a lady in our church who is a registrar for the Bureau of Motor Vehicles. And she said, I think the best thing to do is you sign the title, I'll make up temporary tags for them to take the car to Minnesota on. She knows all the legal ins and outs, and I don't, so I'm glad we had contact with her. She's also a notary, so Sunday night after church, we're going to sign our title, and she's going to notarize it for us. I called to cancel the cell phone contract, and last time we had a year contract. They wouldn't let us out of it. We were here 6 months. We used the phone 6 months. They wouldn't let us out. We paid for the next 6 months. This time, we had a different company, and my sister had talked to them, and they said, well, if they have a letter from their company, which obviously would be the mission, we'll let them out of their contract. So I called Monday And I said, we're going to be leaving the country for 2.5 years, and you don't have network in our country. What do we do? What do we need to do? And she said, well, I know what we do in the States. They just give us their new address. We check, see if they have, we have network in that area. And if we don't have network, we cancel it. But I don't know what we do internationally. So she said, let me check. So she went, and I was on hold. You know all those holds you get on the telephone. And she came back, and she said, what's your address going to be? No, we don't have service there. When do you want your contract canceled? No ladder, nothing. When do you want your contract canceled? Do you want it canceled? Our month actually started on the 8th. Do you want it canceled on the 8th? Or when are you leaving? And I said, the 14th. She said, you want to have your phone till then? I said, let's cancel it on the 15th, if that's okay. She said, it's canceled on the 15th. Then we take our phone with us. So all the little details and how the Lord works it out. And you know, Don fell and broke his rib. And people say, well, several people asked us, is that going to change when you go back? And he said, well, not as, you know, if there aren't any complications, it won't. And he's not able to lift anything. And when it first happened, he wasn't able to bend real easily. But you know, for him, that has given him the last week and a half where he's had to prepare for the Wednesday after it happened, last Sunday, Wednesday night this week, and he's preaching Sunday night in our home church. And that's all he's had to do. So the Lord has given him almost 2 weeks to rest. He's sleeping at night. So the Lord has given him these 2 weeks. And so even though he broke a rib, it's been a blessing because he's been able to have 2 weeks of rest before we go back and hit the ground running. And I see that as a blessing. It's meant more work for me because I do all the packing. But it has meant that he's been able to rest, and that's been a blessing to me. When we go back, Mario and Miriam, the couple that have been covering for us, we get back on Wednesday, Lord willing, and they leave on Thursday. There has not been anybody in the work where they're going to be going in Colonia since August. There's two families, and that's all. So we would ask that you pray for Mario and Miriam as they move to their new work, that they would be excited about it, that the people in the area would be excited, and that the Lord would bless, that he would have hearts prepared, families prepared for them and the work that they'll be going to up there. With them leaving, that puts Young People's on Saturday, Teen Sunday School class on Sunday, and the Little Ones Sunday School class on Sunday is our responsibilities. And so far, Don hasn't asked Dana to preach, so as far as I know, he'll be preaching Sunday evening when we get back to a week from Sunday. Susanna, we've mentioned in some of our meetings, and I'm not sure all of you, but she started dating an unsafe fella, and her husband had died, so it was perfectly all right for her to remarry. But she started dating an unsafe fellow, and so Don wrote her a letter and said that you have a month to decide what you're going to do, whether you're going to be obedient to what Scripture says in not dating or marrying an unsafe fellow, whether you're going to give up your Sunday school class. And she chose to give up her Sunday school class. So pray for Susanna. Ladies Retreat is October 29th to November 1st. And Bennett Jones is the speaker for it. So I'm really excited we get back. But pray that Susanna would go to Ladies Retreat and that God would speak to her heart. And pray that I would even have opportunity to talk with her while we're at Ladies Retreat. And it's not impossible for God to save Leonardo, the fellow that she's dating. But just pray that she would be wise and that she would make the choices that God would have her to do. That leaves me with the Little Ones class again. I'll miss teaching my teen girls. I love teaching the teen girls down there and interacting with them. But the Little Ones class, Valerie, one of our teens, is about 19. She does know the Lord. And we're going to ask her if she would like to become my helper in this Little Ones class, and then I would teach her to teach by experience, by watching me, and then in some instruction. And then 6 months down the road, maybe she could teach one Sunday a month for 2-3 months, and then she could take 2 Sundays a month, and then hopefully within the year she'd be able to take the class over. And pray for Don as he teaches both the teen guys and the teen girls. It's a big class. It's a big group. Then we've got lots of visits to make. There are some new ones that have been coming since we've been on furlough. Some of Mario's relatives have been coming. Pray that Mario's relatives would continue coming. They're unsaved. But pray they would continue coming and weren't just coming because he was there. And pray for their salvation also. Pray for us as we visit some of the other new contacts that were there. Some of our teens and children have stopped coming. I'm not sure about the adults. And pray as we visit them that they would desire to come back. And then one of the things that we really want to do is spend concentrated time with the parents of our Sunday school children and teens and just challenging them with where will they spend eternity. Most of the people in Uruguay are very secular and they don't care. They don't even think about it. And so we want to challenge them. So pray for prepared hearts. Pray for Rosanna. She's the one that lost her teenage daughter, Evelyn. July next year will be 2 years. And she has a very unpleasant thing that she'll have to do in July. So just pray for her for strength, that the Lord would continue to give her grace. She did separate from her husband because of his drinking. Pray that we'd be able to encourage her when we go back. Our teens, I would say probably 90% of them are unsaved. Pray that the Lord would work in their hearts because they need the Lord. What about the property? We've got a team possibly coming down in February. They said, what have you got for us to do? We said, well, there's plumbing, electrical work, there's painting, there's ceramic tile, there's digging ditches to put the water line in from where we have to put a meter into the house and then from the house to the septic system. You name it, we've probably got it for you to do. Just pray for those that would be coming on the teams and also for the finances to do all the work that needs to be done yet down there. Pray for help for us. Most of you know Josh Shaver is teaching school. We do not know what that means, whether it's just for this year or whether it's for the next 4 or 5 years. They've talked about trying to teach and do deputation in the summertime, and we don't see that working. So just pray that the Lord would direct as to whether he would have them in Uruguay or teaching school. Mario and Miriam are moving on because the Lord didn't raise up the support for them until after they'd already committed to another place. And then Mark and Jennifer, that we had mentioned the possibility of coming down for 2 years, called us about 3-4 weeks ago and said they wouldn't be coming down. So we say, okay, Lord, now we need quadruple strength. We need daily strength. Plus, we need strength for what Josh and Rebecca were going to do. Plus, we need strength for what Mark and Jennifer are going to help us with. Plus, we need strength just because we're getting older. So pray for quadruple strength for us. Pray that we would see whole families saved and coming, that they can be trained. And pray for John, Mark, and Deborah. Lord willing, they'll be starting deputation shortly after the first of the year. And they'd love to be on the field by summer of 2010. And we'd love to have them there. So pray that the Lord would raise up their support quickly. People say there's an economic crisis. But God doesn't have an economic crisis. And I can give you an example of that. Last year in December, we had enough money to send 5 campers to camp. That was all. Facundo, Evelyn's little brother, Rosanna's son, cried because he thought he wouldn't be able to go to camp because we didn't have the money to send him. So we got our Christmas gifts. And some of you were part of those Christmas gifts. So we used those Christmas gifts to send our kids to camp and our families to camp and our teens to camp. And we were thrilled we could do that. Somebody said, well, we sent those Christmas gifts down there for you. And we said, yes, but you sent them down for us to use the way we wanted them to, didn't you? And we said, that's what we did. We used it the way we wanted to. Gifts usually come with no strings attached, usually. obviously we try to be good stewards and aren't throwing it out the window, the partner. But this year, we have one church that sends, they have a vacation Bible school in the summer, and they have four of their missionaries that they support that have a camping ministry, whether they actually run the camp or whether they just send campers. And so they divide their vacation Bible school offering between those four missionaries. And that was the money that we had last year to send those almost five campers. So this year we got almost five campers again from them. 2 years ago, there was a lady in a church that sent us $50 for camp. When we were there this time, she said, "Can I write you a check for campers?" We said, "Sure, we're thinking two more campers." When she handed me the check was for $500. She says, "How many campers will that send?" "Well, we don't know exactly what it'll be, but divide it by 40, and you've got over 10, you've got 12, about 12 and a half campers. So now we're up to 18 we can send. And if it's only 35, it depends on what the dollar does and what they do with the cost of camp." Then another church sent us $300, marked campers. On a statement when we were doing our letters this last week, we noticed that there was an offering that we had not even known about, $349.13, campers or Bibles. If you add that all up, we're now up to over $1,300. And we usually spend between $1,500 to $1,800 for campers. So there might be an economic crisis, but God doesn't have one. And we're so very, very thankful that we serve a God who's dependable, who's always faithful, and he doesn't change.